Hello and welcome to the Clout and Blue podcast post-match reaction sponsored by NordVPN. I'm your host, Dan Rowlands, and I'm joined here by Matt Lynch, who only ever appears when Villa have a good result. He's our lucky charm for the podcast. Matt, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm all good, thank you. I think I'm more relieved than anything else after that one. I just didn't anticipated it, but I don't know why I anticipated it. It was sheer blind faith.
You had a bet on, didn't you, of a Villa win?
Yeah, I mean, I did, but it didn't come in because John didn't get booked. But in the grand scheme of things, I can't say I'm too fussed about that. It's just, yeah, it's just one of them games that it doesn't happen to us, does it? Those sort of games, they're not meant to happen. It just doesn't happen.
No, it doesn't. Although we haven't done the double over Arsenal now, which is it's lovely, isn't it? Emi Martinez giving it massive to the crowd at the end as well, which I'm sure feels unbelievable for him. What a day. What a weekend of football for obviously Spurs playing yesterday away at Newcastle and everyone trying to predict the running, which we will be doing a podcast ourselves in the next, I don't know, few days or so, or probably next week of who's playing with who and where. It's difficult, isn't it? Because you look at those games that Spurs have got and United have got and we've got and think, it's too difficult to look too far in advance because how many people would have put Villa down today for a loss? A lot of Villa fans as well, never mind the neutrals. But to go into today knowing that Spurs have already lost 4-0, great for the goal difference, to know that Man United have dropped points once again to Bournemouth. I hate the phrase free hit because every game is important. We should go into every game trying to get some kind of points out of it. And Emery and the team, of course, will do that. But you think, well, if we do lose, it's not really the end of the world because we won't really have lost any ground on anybody important. So I don't think Man United are in conversation for the top five. So we've not lost ground to Spurs. If we get even a point at the Emirates, that's a brilliant weekend. To go and win and play in the way we did, I don't sound speechless. I've done a lot of talking there, but I feel speechless. Like, I'm not quite sure how to wrap my head around that.
Yeah, I mean, coming into the weekend, I expected Spurs to lose, to be honest, but I also had the mindset of, if we lose, then it's just the case of that goal difference. And then with the Spurs game in hand, I'm not sure how soon that's going to be in terms of the calendar, but I'm sort of looking at it and going, okay, there's a run in now, five games or so where we're going to realistically need about four wins. But now I look at it and suddenly the pressure's suddenly all on Spurs to win that game in hand. And by all means, that goal difference is in a much tidier position. I think we started, I haven't looked since the final whistle, but we started the day with a one better goal difference. Now that must be three. So realistically, it's certainly in a position whereby Spurs have got to win, but they've probably got to win by three goals, and other results have to go certain ways if we keep our head up above the line as we are as it stands.
Yeah, it's now, as they were saying, you know, all the Sky Sports coverage was, this result is about the title, and to them it is. It's about Arsenal and Liverpool losing and Man City being in the driving seat, blah, blah, blah. For us, it's about the top four race, and this is such a massive result, isn't it? It's one that somebody in the comments has scrolling so quick. There's so many people watching live, so thank you for choosing our podcast to come and listen to. But you kind of flip the results of the Brentford and today, and you probably thought, well, we'll beat Brentford and maybe we'll get a point against Arsenal, and 4 points out of those would be a great return to get 4 points. But the other way around, by beating Arsenal, you know, once the Brentford game happens, we're all thinking, well, we won't get anything at Arsenal, so 1 point out of those two games is poor. For it to become 4 points because we go there and put in one of the best away performances of the season, one of the best performances since Arsenal, which was a long time ago, to kind of pull that out of the bag for Emi Martinez, for Unai Emery. What a day that is. And for all those Villa fans that have been there this afternoon, enjoy it. That must have been unbelievable.
The thing is with it is that I genuinely mark that down as Unai Emery's best win as a Villa manager. I said it on Twitter more or less after the final whistle, and a lot of fans are saying, oh, Man City, Arsenal at home, and that run, obviously pre-Christmas. But for me, if you look at today in isolation, perhaps that is the case. But if you look over the course of the season, I mean, no Douglas Luiz, no Kamara, two players that were hugely influential a few months ago back for us, not in that 11. I mean, Morgan Rodgers is in that side, played out of his skin, so possibly the best game we've seen from him. The same for Zaniolo. Yeah. Those two boys, I mean, Diego Carlos, look, all those three players in particular didn't have a sniff being in this side pre-Christmas until the injuries, and they forced their way in by virtue of the fact, obviously signed Morgan Rodgers anyway, but the other two guys by virtue of injuries, they found their way into the side and really cemented their place at that as well. So it's a special performance for me, and it will be one that you look back on. It's easy to say, oh, so many more games to go, blah, 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 but I'd have snapped your hand off if you said we've got 4 points from Arsenal and Brentford, whichever way round it is. So in isolation, it's incredible. And in terms of the bigger picture, it's even bigger. And then it's just sort of somebody said in the comments, Spurs have got Arsenal next. So, you know, it's all to play for, isn't it?
And they don't play next weekend when we play Bournemouth. So an opportunity again to open up that gap. And I think we kick off before them in the game when they play Arsenal, whoever we play that weekend, we play before them as well. So in theory, we're now talking about a possibility where obviously we've got to go and win the next two games. But before Spurs even kick a ball after yesterday, Villa have gone on and gotten 9 points. And that's unbelievable pressure on Tottenham. And you'd almost say it was over at that point for the top four. Are we still looking at the top five and the coefficient and stuff? Or do you genuinely think now that the top four is, I say, in our hands? It is to an extent, isn't it? If we won every single game now, nobody could catch us, but that's a big ask. Do you think top four is now not definitely doable?
I think it felt a little bit like we'd maybe lost it.
You know, lost control of it a little bit a couple of weeks ago.
A few weeks ago, I had the minds that our top five will get us through with the coefficient. But the more I look at, we can't rely on West Ham doing well in Europe. We can't rely on Arsenal and Man City doing well in Europe to pull us through in the coefficient for the top five. So, in that front, it's the case of taking it out of the hands of others and putting it in our own hands. And I'm sure that's probably the message from Unai Emery anyway, is that top four should be the priority on the fact that we can't rely on the idea that top five is going to be a part of the coefficient. I mean, it's mind-bogglingly confusing for anyone to look at anyway, but I'd rather it be clean cut and know come the final game of the season that we've not been waiting on results within the Champions League and the Europa League to force our way in.
I've just got to mention a comment from Mexico Villain here, and I don't want this to come across in the wrong way, although it probably will. And it's about again, I'm on this podcast. I try and include as many comments as we can in various shows to get different viewpoints across, but I can only give my own opinion as I see it. And I try to be a positive fan towards the whole situation in every facet of the club, but particularly on the pitch. I often predict Villa to win most games, even against the most difficult of opponents. So I just want Villa to win every single week. And sometimes that comes across as overly positive or deluded or whatever. Every so often I'll get that I'm overly negative. And, you hear football commentators talking about like being biased towards different clubs and stuff. That's how I kind of feel sometimes. I can either win if I'm positive or negative. Mexico Villain says, calm down, Dan. Bournemouth are a good side, clearly playing with a lot of confidence. We've just beat Arsenal at the Emirates. How do you now not come out of that game? I think, well, we can beat anybody if we can do that. We're now going to. I know it doesn't work like that, but we're now going to struggle to Bournemouth at home. Well, yes, possibly we could, but as of right now, the game finished, what, half an hour ago. How can you not just go into the rest of the season and think, well, we might need two wins, and all this talk before kickoff about where are those two wins going to come from? Arsenal's a write-off. Palace away is going to be difficult. Liverpool at home, what's going to happen? We beat Arsenal. You've now got to be looking at Villa going, they're favourites to get something out of Bournemouth. Chelsea at home at Villa Park is a big game. Palace away, yes, Palace are decent, but come on, they're a mid-table side. You should now be looking at Villa to go on and get another two or three wins and end the season on a high and finish fourth. Surely that is the attitude of every Villa fan now. You've got to be positive about the situation.
Obviously Lille is the elephant in the room in terms of midweek, of course, and how that could impact proceedings thereon. But in terms of that Bournemouth game, I look at that Bournemouth team especially, and I think that they blow so hot and cold. They've gone through streaks where they've won 7 and 8 and then lost their next 7. They're just so hot and cold that run could end one way or another.
That,
so,
that could be a difficult game in isolation. Of course, Brentford caused us problems. But
when we were on pre-Christmas in terms of at home, like there's all these factors, but it's right to enjoy days like today, because to do the double over Arsenal is something that not many people can take the best of times, but especially Aston Villa. I mean, I know at the Emirates we've always seemed to have had a good bit of fortune over time since they moved there, but in recent times especially, it's felt like it's been a long time coming, and especially at times where we've gone to Arsenal, we've gone to Man City and been on the end of hidings. I mean, we got on the end of a hiding the other week against Man City, but we're sort of, that's been the mentality of the past, is, oh, we're going to get absolutely smacked one here. But I didn't today. I genuinely believed we'd go out there and put a performance on and win the game, and it's what we've done. And I think that that's down to, you know, Emery and the mentality that is instilled, and I'd like to think that that's washing off of fans now, that they feel like that, and that's the way it should be, because in the past fans have always felt a bit glum going into games like today, and it's understandable. And as much as anything else, that's what changes the atmosphere at home, is then when you go and play at home, you go there not necessarily expecting to win, but you're more likely and feeling a bit more confident, which naturally improves the atmosphere.
Yeah, I think we've just got to change our mindset as fans now, this is a different beast. This is a different club than we've supported for, or for you and me at least, for the whole of our lives, basically. This isn't the plucky underdog anymore. And I'm not saying that in the sense that we should go out expecting to win every single game and win trophies and win titles. Obviously not. But this kind of attitude of, oh, well, we probably won't get anything there because we never do, you know, same old Villa, classic Villa, or typical Villa to throw it away, all that kind of stuff. The comments on our preview for this game, and again, everyone's entitled to their opinion, and after the Lille game as well, despite winning that game, was, oh, we haven't won it by enough. I really fear for us away next week. Oh, we're going to go out of the Conference League. And then we got Arsenal on the weekend. We'll obviously lose then. It's like that attitude has to change as supporters, I think. I don't see what value that brings to anything. That scenario of, oh, we're going to lose to Lille and Arsenal is purely hypothetical, right? In the same sense that winning both games is also purely hypothetical, but that enables positivity and actually being happy about things. So why not go for that hypothetical situation rather than the negative one where you just expect Villa to lose all the time? This is Aston Villa under Unai Emery that are a serious, serious football team and shouldn't be underestimated going into any game of, oh, well, we'll probably lose there because we've got a crap record and, oh, so-and-so is on form. Or how is he going to deal with Luka Dean on the left-hand side? Forget all that. Go into every game thinking this manager will have a plan for it. And yes, sometimes that is going to go wrong and we'll lose games. As I said, we're not going to go on and win every single week and win titles. But we will be a consistent top six team under Unai Emery as long as he is here, I feel like, because he just knows what he's doing. Like, it goes without saying, doesn't it? Manager that's played 1,000 games knows what he's doing, yeah, obviously, but he just gets it. He knows exactly what to do in every single game. Sometimes that will work and sometimes it doesn't. And today, all this... Sorry, I'm going off on one here. This is going to be one of the most rambly podcasts ever. When I've calmed down in the next few days, we'll probably assess this a little differently. But all the stuff from the opposition as well, Arsenal specifically today, but just neutral fans, this second season Emery rubbish that we keep hearing about. What, the second season that we're about to qualify for the Champions League? This second season Emery that's done the double over his former club, out-tacticked, which is not a word. This brilliant young manager, Mikel Arteta. This Arsenal side that's not even scored a goal against us. This Aston Villa side that's kept a clean sheet and done the double over Arsenal while they're in a title race. Like, come on, let's give this side a little bit of credit for once.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the thing you have to remember here with Unai as much as anything else is that Arsenal fans have got short-termism. It wasn't like it was all pretty under Mikel Arteta for the first 18 months.
No.
It was honking as bad as... It was worse than under the Emery period, where, by the way, they got to a Europa Conference League final. Not Conference League.
Europa League
final. And they played some really good football and got to an FA Cup final, I think, as well, wasn't it? So it's not like that Unai Emery was their answer. But if anything, perhaps he didn't get enough time, you could argue there. But that's where it's favoured us anyway, long term. But the idea that Emery has, let's coin the term, bottled anything is crazy. It's nuts to suggest that. The guy is a serial winner, and the way he must have prepared for a game like today cannot be understated. I mean, You look at it from a set-piece standpoint. Arsenal scored more set-pieces than anyone else this season. We've conceded more set-pieces, more than anyone but two teams in the league, and conceded more goals than anyone else between the 45th and 60th minute. All those things today, you'd never be able to tell. Arsenal were limited to four corners in that game. And did they worry us once in those corners? No. From the set pieces they did have in their own dangerous areas, did they threaten us? No. And that tells me something about the work that must be going in to try and rectify some of those issues, especially defensively. But when you're coming against a team like Arsenal that are so good from set pieces, I genuinely think they're probably better than us at them as well, just by virtue of the fact that you look at their numbers this season. We've done an absolute number on them, the fact that we've limited them to four corners and that they've not done anything with them, considering how shaky we are from them. So it's a testament to them, but it's also a testament to someone like Diego Carlos, who was outstanding today. Genuinely, that I expected to walk through the doors at Villa Park before the injury. And you can see why he has got Brazil caps to his name, because he is that good. And I think he's been so unfortunate in the past. And he got a bit of undue stick, perhaps midweek or last week. But for me, I think he's been really good since he's come into the side. And he's done a really good job for us. And I think he's still got a huge part to play in the club long term.
Yeah, I hope so. Let's talk about Ollie Watkins. The guy that can't finish, the striker that's not elite standard, who is now second in the top goal scoring race for the Golden Boots, only one behind Erling Haaland, which, you know, we kind of say the Golden Boot winner without a Haaland, you know, kind of he's probably going to win it by default. Who's going to be second? That's the real winner, isn't it? Who's second? It is probably or possibly going to be Ollie Watkins. He's one goal away in the league from a 20-goal season, which will be a record that's broken for Villa since, is it the Peter with? Was that the one since 80, whatever it was, 81, I think. No, Villa striker scored 20 league goals in the top flight since then. He will break that. There's no doubt in my mind that he won. He's got 5 games left. He's not going to not score. I mean, he does go on streaks of not scoring, but the way he's playing, he's definitely going to score at least one more goal, knowing that that record is one goal away. He's got the most goal contributions. He has had an unbelievable season, and I think we will need to do a separate show at some point about him being a genuine contender for Player of the Year. He won't get it because he plays for Aston Villa, and it will probably go to a Man City player if they win the league and all that kind of stuff. But he should have a genuine shout for Player of the Season without a shadow of a doubt. Always talk about Tony or Watkins for England. All that should be in the bin as well. Ollie Watkins should definitely be in the England squad in the Euros. He's an unbelievable striker, and I'm so glad that he's been able to kind of prove doubters wrong. That he that finish for the second goal is world class, I thought. And we spoke, me and Matt spoke, I don't know when it was, after Leo possibly, about it was, yeah. I said something like, if we're to go on to win the Conference League, how important are both ends of the pitch with Martinez and Watkins? And we'll talk about Martinez in a sec. But if Watkins is dangerous and scoring goals, Villa have got a chance in every single game they play. We saw those two players in the space of about 30 seconds in the first half. Martinez making that, again, a world-class save. That was unbelievable, the one with his feet. That should have been a certain goal. And for Watkins to go up the pitch literally 30 seconds later and hit the post, it was one of those ones, wasn't it? Hits the post and kind of curls and almost hits the second post, it's rather than coming straight back out. And you kind of think, if we're to do anything in any game ever, it's those two that are going to help Villa do something. That's really simplifying it, but a great goalkeeper and a great striker will take you places. Ollie Watkins is so close to being a record breaker for Aston Villa. And like I said, I'm sure he's going to do it. If he sticks around, and I'm sure he will, and I hope he does, what's his ceiling for us? Because like the Gabby record is kind of next in sight, isn't it, to get, is it 72 Premier League goals or something like that that Gabby's got? And Watkins, I don't know what he's on without checking. Is he on 50-something maybe off the top of my head? He can't be a million miles away.
I think he's gone to 57 today. I'm pretty 57. Sure I looked, about 56, something
like that. So if he has, even if he stays just for next season, let's say, and then left after that for whatever reason, if he has another decent season next year of 15 to 20 league goals, he will become Villa's all-time Premier League top goal scorer and fully deserved of that crown, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, he is the striker that Arsenal fans wish Gabriel Jesus is, genuinely. Yeah. There's no skin on the bones about this. I think he's generally a world-class striker. I'd put him in that bracket that's below your Osimhens, your Haalands and your Mbappes. I genuinely think he is in the top of that bracket below that. And sorry, your Canes as well. He is that good. And this isn't a striker that has had it easy as well in terms of this path. And I think Unai Emery has made him into an elite player from a good player. He was a very good player before that was streaky, yeah. But I don't think we can call him streak anymore. I think his
record
has been impeccable. And this isn't just a one-season wonder. He had double figures last season as well. It's not like he scored 5 goals last season, suddenly he's on this hot streak. Like, he's genuinely been transformed by Unai Emery into an all-round striker who is good enough to probably play in any team in this league. I know you can say Man City got a wealth and embarrassment of riches, but genuinely, you could put him in any side in this league outside of Villa at the top end, and he'd score goals for fun. He is that good. And the fact that none of these goals are penalties, by the way, as well, should be hugely noted as well. I think that penalties in terms of goals scored is always going to sway things. So for him to have none in the league, 19 goals in play, I mean, what is he? He's over 30 now for the season overall, surely. All competitions or close.
Got to be close, yeah.
He's got to be close to, and that's going to be the other target as well. That will happen as well, and the chances are he'll probably pick up the Conference League top goal scorer if we do go all the way. So there's so many accolades up for him this season.
What a season!
You've got to look at it and go, how can you not say he's world class? If he gets into the top four, he goes to the Euros as the second fiddle to Harry Kane. I mean, run their superlatives for the guy, to be honest. Yeah. And it's a testament to his hard work because he's genuinely not had it easy in terms of a pathway, but it's a testament to Unai Emery and his coaching team as well in terms of what he's delivered for Ollie.
Yeah, the record, and this is from the Villa website, so I don't know whether this includes today or not, says he's got 26 goals this season, so that's possibly 27 with today. Gabby Bonahol's got 74 Premier League goals. Ollie Watkins, according to PremierLeague.com, is 59. And that does include today. So he's only 15 away from matching the record, which, you know, he could get by the end of next season, pretty comfortably, to be honest. Another couple this year, 12 to 13. Next year would be a poor season by Watkins standards, but that would get him to get over the record. Just talk about Martinez, the other end of the pitch. That save, world class.
Oh, it's ridiculous. And this is the second save in as many days where you've gotten that is why he's the world number one. And I don't think he's had a bad game for a while for us. I know there's the mistake for the Odegaard goal last season against Arsenal, but I genuinely can't think of many other mistakes that come to mind when I think of Emi Martinez in the Villa shirt. He has a few nuts moments, but I wouldn't say they're moments that you think are going to lead to a mistake. And there's so much faith in the guy in terms of what he can deliver for us. And I felt sorry for him at times this season, especially in the last few weeks, because our defending's been sickeningly bad at times in the last few weeks. So for a game like today to stand up and be counted like he has, and for the stick he got from the Arsenal fans as well, which is nuts considering Arsenal have rifled through three keepers since they sold Martinez.
I'd have won the league already if Martinez was still there.
It's crazy that he's had to deal with that. I know it's standard practice for a footballer, but he'd love to know what goes through the mindset of the fans that go, yeah, no, we've managed to go through three keepers, but yeah, I'm still going to boo Emi Martinez because he was the problem. I know he's spoken a bit ill of them in the past, but blimey, he's the world number one for a reason, and he's shown that today. And that's not just in that moment, but it's the way he keeps everyone else composed and the rest of the qualities that he brings to that team. He's a captain without having the armband a lot of the time. And I know he does get the armband if McGinn's not playing and obviously Mings and what have you, but he's a leader on that pitch and he carries so much for us importance-wise that goes beyond what he does on the football pitch for sure.
Yeah, and the kind of the world-class side saves aside, which sounds mad because obviously they are worthy of talking about, but even the things that other goalkeepers make look difficult, Emi Martinez makes them look easy. How many times do you see a goalkeeper parry something that you think Martinez would have caught that? They parried it into danger and he's just pounced on it and quashed any kind of pressure on Villa. That is vitally important to have when you're under the cosh, to come out and be able to catch a ball in the air from a cross or a corner and just settle things down. To have a shot that you see other goalkeepers parry away, but he dives onto it and kills any momentum. Those kind of things go understated as well. And us as Villa fans probably almost take some of the basics for granted because his high level saves are so good. The rest of his game kind of goes under the radar a little bit. But overall, he's massively improved as well since Emery's come. He was, again, a very, very good goalkeeper before. But his all-round game now has definitely gone up a level. And yeah, as I say, if he was still at Arsenal, they'd have won a title by this point. Not specifically this season, they might have gone on to win it last year. Again, doesn't really work like that. But he's that good. And again, he could go into any side like Watkins and be a great signing for any side. But we're very, very lucky to have both of them. Hopefully they're here for a long time. One probably final thing I want to mention is Unai Emery's comments from John's Twitter. This will be straight in the press conference afterwards. Unai Emery finally admits Aston Villa could be contenders to qualify for Champions League football this season. The quote is, okay, 63, we could now be contenders. We must be very demanding to keep it. Now, he's always said, hasn't he, to kind of ask me after game week 32, 33, 34. That's when I'll tell you. And we saw this, and we've spoken about this in previous shows. We saw the shift last season that Europe was never a target, was it? It was always that, not for word for word, but we'll see what we can do. Like we'll keep plugging away. And then all of a sudden, we got to around this stage of the season, it was like, we want Europa Conference League. We want to finish in the top seven. And it was, this is a target we're now going for. This season, Unai Emery said all along, there are seven better contenders than us. There's the traditional top seven, top six plus Newcastle. They've got the biggest budgets. They should be the top six, even when we've been up in third at Christmas and all these kind of things. And he's now finally saying at this stage of the season, we are a contender for the Champions League. He's shifting that mentality of, this is now where we start to put pressure on teams. This is now where we start to go out and grind out results and pick up the, 6 points we need to pretty much guarantee. Is 69 going to be enough, do you think?
Maybe I think we're going to need more. I think that Spurs will push it. The key thing for me is that game in hand for Spurs.
Chelsea away, though. That's not a gimme, is it?
Yeah, it's not by any means. But I look at this Ange side and it's so unpredictable. I mean, you could see they were going to get spanked yesterday. It was inevitable. That's just what happens with Spurs away at Newcastle these days for whatever reason. And then the Arsenal game could go one way or another just by virtue of the fact that Arsenal have got Bayern midweek. And if Bayern beat them there, you look at it and the way Liverpool have folded since the draw against Man United, they've looked totally off it. And Arsenal looked totally off it today by interest. I mean, I know we were very good as well, but Arsenal looked off it. So I don't know. I think it's this pessimism within me that says that we're going to need more than the six or nine and whatever. But I think we're probably in pole position, it's fair to say now. And it's good that that mentality has shifted towards that. But as much as anything else, I think that Unai's no-blame culture towards any of this is so big. He could have easily whinged at decisions in recent weeks, and he's not. He's just sort of cracked on, and we've sort of let the football do the talking, and it's so perfect for us in terms of position now, because I think, as I said before, the pressure's on Spurs right now. It's so much on Spurs, and we know what Spurs do under pressure, and it's not win games of football. So it might well be that six or nine does it, but I just want to go out there and we beat Bournemouth, and then we focus on the next game, we roll through. And by all means, we have to remember that there's still a Conference League title potentially if we grab as well.
Yeah, it's nothing is achieved yet. Nothing is done yet. I mean, looking at the Premier League table, people yesterday, again, the kind of pessimism ingrained in Villa fans when Newcastle beat Spurs was, okay, that's good that Spurs have lost, but can Newcastle catch us? It's like, come on. Newcastle, with our win now, 13 points behind us. That's where sixth place is. They've actually gone above Man United on goal difference. So it's 50 points for Villa to drop down to sixth place. 50 points, I wish it was. 13-point swing for us to drop down to sixth place. The goal difference to Newcastle is obviously much better than Man United, so if it was to Man United, we'd say 14 points. But that's still four wins and a draw, or five wins, and for Villa to lose five for anyone to catch us to get fifth. So I will say, and go on record now to say, I think we're guaranteed to finish at least fifth, which I've been saying for a long time anyway. I don't think any of those will catch us, and it would take a momentous... I mean, Villa would have to lose every game, which is not going to happen, is it? If we have a terrible run, we'd still win probably one out of the five. We're not going to lose five games in a row, and Newcastle or Man United are not going to win four out of five. It's just not going to happen. So that's fifth for me, wrapped up. Fourth, again, is in our hands to the extent that if we won every game, nobody could catch us. But I don't think we'll do that either. I think if Villa can get to 70 points, which is seven more points from five games, which is not a massive return, is it? 7 points from five, when there's 15 available, it's barely half. It's not even a great run, is it, to get 7 points from 15? If Villa can just do that and get to 70, they've got, I think, a very good chance of finishing fourth. But obviously that would depend on West Ham. West Ham? Got distracted by a comment there. By Spurs, who have a difficult run, and I'm not even convinced Spurs will get to 70. But hard to predict. Very, very hard to predict, and a long way to go.
That's, to be fair, I've just had a quick look at that Spurs running, and you look at it, I mean, as you say, Chelsea's that game in hand. They've got Arsenal next, but after that, they've got Liverpool away, Burnley at home, Man City at home, Sheffield United at home. They theoretically, Burnley could go into that game against Spurs and still be right in the picture to try and survive. The way Burnley are playing, I don't know if you saw the goal they conceded yesterday, but they're still very much still in the picture to survive. So,
also, the flip side of that is that they could also already be relegated. And that sometimes sees a weird fixture where they could almost play with no pressure and they get a stupid result. Like, Sheffield United could beat Spurs on the last day because they're already down. Like, it's too a crazy period of time to just go, well, they'll win those two easy games and they'll lose all the hard ones. They might beat Man City, but if they lost to Sheffield United, you kind of go, well, that's their par for the points that we expected them to get. So it's we will do a podcast about it, but it is pointless to go, well, they'll win here and lose there and win there and get to 71 points, because it's just so difficult to predict.
Yeah. It is, but I look at it and go, you know what, bring it on either way.
Yeah.
If it means that we have to score a last minute winner against Palace on the final game of the season to do it, then I'm all for that roller coaster. But equally, I'm all for the idea that we go to Brighton first weekend of May and it's already wrapped up. So, you know, one way or another, I'd be very happy with the season's work at that stage.
Yeah. Well, we'll call it a day there. We've done 30 minutes. Myself and John Townley, possibly Matt Kendrick as well, we'll be doing our Monday show Q&A tomorrow. So if you are listening to this and want to leave a question for us, you can do so in the YouTube comments down below. Once we've gone off air, you can scroll down and the pre-recorded video will allow you to leave a proper comment. But we'll also put a tweet out as well, so you can come and find us on social media and share your comments and thoughts and opinions, and we'll put those together for the Q&A tomorrow. Matt, thank you very much for your time this evening. It's been a joy to chat Aston Villa with you. Can you just hear that one thing? I think it's the Champions League anthem at Villa Park, everyone. I can just about hear in the distance my cringe outro. Thank everyone for joining me. As always, this podcast is also available as an audio-only show, so you can listen to the Current Blue podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, etc., whatever is out there. You can find us by searching Claret and Blue. Do remember that this podcast is also sponsored by NordVPN. If you would like a discount code for NordVPN, you can find that in the description down below on YouTube or the Spotify, iTunes as well in the description. Matt, thank you for watching. Nope, Matt, thank you for joining me. Thank you for watching or listening at home. And we'll see you again tomorrow. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.